Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's not my fault you're like in love with me. It's VGC, the video game podcast, with me, Jordan Midler, Andy Robinson, and Jake Tucker. This week, we know the four Xbox games jumping ship, we know about Nintendo's 2024 lineup, and we finally know more about Shadow of the Erdtree. But first, how are we doing, folks? Jake, welcome. You finally battered your way onto this podcast after me ducking and diving. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's long, long, long overdue. Andy, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah. A bit coldy. I spent the weekend in Butlin surrounded by children, so inevitably I've picked up the lurgy. So if I sound a little bit chesty on this podcast, please forgive me.
Oh, it's all good, brother. What is the done thing in Butlins these days?
Silent discos, Chumbawamba, that sort of thing.
No arcade games? Arcades
are utterly depressing now in the UK seaside towns, right? They are utterly depressing. It's like, if you want to go and see a large version of Flappy Bird that costs a quid a go, which you win tickets that encourages children to gamble and go and change them up for a pack of crayons, then you need to head to a seaside arcade.
There's a decent arcade in Glasgow in the Scenic Centre now. So if they want to sponsor this podcast, they're welcome to. That has like tons of good games and the big versions of mobile games and all that shit. But the prizes are legit. The prizes are all like special edition Switches. It was like the Animal Crossing Switch, the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet Switch. And sure, you would potentially have to spend $100,000 on the games to actually get them any tickets.
2 to 4 years, right?
I mean, you never know. It's all possible, or because it's in the Scenic Centre in Glasgow, someone's just going to break that glass and take it. But we have a lot of news this week. First point of order, there is another podcast coming out today. Our Final Fantasy VII Rebirth review cast will be out now on YouTube and later on podcast services around the globe. I wrangled together Jade from The Gamer, Ed from Eurogamer, and Alex Donaldson, Mr. RPG himself from VG247, to talk all things Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You can also check out our review, which will be on the site as you are.
Is the podcast as long as the game?
No, the podcast is, based on how long it took me to complete it, the podcast is 1/80th of the game, and it's a long-ass podcast.
So it's just a day-long podcast then?
Yeah. It's a lot of anime boys looking at each other in the eyes and going, but that's what the people want. Story number one: Xbox announces multi-platform releases for, hold your surprise, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Sea of Thieves, and Grounded. Following weeks of speculation and Chris Ring just telling you what the games were going to be, the company finally addressed the games that are coming to PlayStation and Switch. The four are Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush will come to PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Nintendo Switch. Nintendo Switch actually won't get Hi-Fi Rush, despite there being a little graphic that seemed to suggest that it will get it at some point or switch to it. This whole thing's been a mess. It leaked out on Bethesda's like Portuguese site, and then they're like, oh yeah, it's out. Grounded is coming to PS4, PS5, and Switch, and Sea of Thieves is coming to PS5. Today, February 22nd, and our long national nightmare
is
over.
It has been a complete mess, hasn't it? Like, the messaging's just been all over the shop. Like, their emergency podcast, in which they pretty much said nothing, then contradicted themselves in press interviews they did alongside it. You know, Starfield is not coming to PS5. Well, and then they speak to the press, we would not rule out any game coming to another platform. You know, and anyone with any sort of sense, will be well aware that you don't bring out four games on other platforms without, you know, leaving the door open to do more. It's not a one-off. I mean, if they do well, then they'll bring more. It's yeah. This has been dragged on. It feels so unnecessarily, right? And I imagine it is, there is, of course, there's very clearly behind the scenes reasons for that. They clearly had arrangements with Nintendo and Sony to announce these games, according to you know, kind of various journalists. The Nintendo Direct was pushed back a week, you know, possibly because of the Xbox business update, which ended up with this really awkward scenario where they're like, we're bringing four games to some platforms and we won't tell you what they are. And every journalist knows what they are.
Yep.
You know.
And then they were said we had a specific announcement plan, which ended up being Pentiment got buried in a
here's some other game segment of the Nintendo Partner Direct.
Yeah, we got grounded as an actual trailer. It's a Hi-Fi Rush leaked on just a Portuguese language. Yeah.
What the hell?
Sea of Thieves, just chuck it on the Xbox wire.
Just one normal day of Xbox, please.
Yeah, Jake,
one normal day of Xbox.
How has this gone for
please?
You? It's been a bit of a mess, hasn't it?
Oh, it was wild. I mean, I expect Phil Spencer this morning is like, oh, all according to plan, as he tightens his jacket. But I feel like the weirdest thing about it is that they announced it so badly that Xbox, like, diehard fans suddenly managed to convince themselves with quite some momentum that Xbox was just pulling out of games entirely.
Yeah.
Like how do you get an announcement so badly that all of your fans think you're leaving video games? Like, it's astounding to me. But
The reaction was so extreme the first time that when people saw what it actually was, you can't walk back on that because that's like doubly embarrassing. So they had to find this middle ground of like, oh no, actually this is them done. They're not telling you, but they're pulling out.
Yeah, and it's such a relaxed thing. I actually think this is a really good idea. I think it's the smartest thing they could have done, because if they were in an actual console war, they'd be losing it, right? They're not. Like, there's no console war. At the moment, kind of the PS5 selling a lot more than Xbox. It's a big audience. And Xbox has said for ages that all they want is this big kind of play anywhere ethos. So everyone was really supportive when, you know, Phil Spencer is out on stage saying, hey, we want you to be able to play our games anywhere. And then when they say, hey, actually, you can play these anywhere, people are getting annoyed about it. So I find it quite amusing, to be honest.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, and you're right. You're right. It makes complete sense. It's the right decision. I'm surprised that Sea of Thieves hasn't crossed earlier. This, for me... screams of an experiment, really. It's they're testing the water very much. Sea of Thieves should have happened a long time ago. I think it's a, you know, community driven live service game. It makes complete sense that they open up the audience to more players on that. But the others are like, you know, grounded. Okay, maybe you could say the same thing, but it's not on the same scale. Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush, that is a test, really. It's sort of like these very well received original IPs that you could argue that you open them up to other audiences. You know, maybe if they do more in the future, they might, oh, wow, you know, Hi-Fi Rush 2. Oh, I loved the first one. You know, maybe I'll pick up an Xbox without something, or I'll get a Game Pass subscription. I'll get a PC Game Pass subscription. But, you know, this will come on to the PlayStation stuff if we talk about it later as well, is that the console platform holders are in the same situation right now, is that they're not making enough money. They're spending too much money making these games, and they're not making enough money back. So they need to reach more people, or they need to make cheaper games, or both. You know, games now, we've been talking about this for years. In the games industry, has been talking about it for years, about the creeping budgets, right? Like, it was I think the old kind of cliche was that the budgets double each generation for these AAA console games, you know, your Uncharted's and what have you, your Halos. So what was a 100 million game last generation is now like $200-300 million to make a Spider-Man or a Horizon Forbidden West. And you look at the money they're making, especially like Sony's earnings recently, it's unsustainable. You know, to keep these games on there, locked onto their audience of, you know, what are at 50-ish million at the moment. And the console kind of audience has not grown for 20, 25 to 30 years. You know, it just hasn't. It's always been about 200 mil, you know, and it's never got any bigger than that because, you know, I guess older people kind of grow out of it and not enough younger people are coming in. So it's absolutely the right decision. They need to release more games on PC. They need to release more games on other platforms. And that's always been what Xbox has said. But their actions haven't necessarily always matched their rhetoric, right? I mean, they have kind of let this... It seemed like we're in this console war when, they'll be saying, oh, yeah, games are anywhere. Anyway, Starfield's exclusive and this is exclusive and, blah, blah. So it's never quite matched up. But certainly, this isn't just a Microsoft thing. Sony will be doing this as well.
Absolutely. I think the only real mistake that Xbox has made is they've spent the last couple of years cozying up to influencers and fans who make owning an Xbox their entire identity, right? Because now that kind of feels a bit threatened, people are now angry that other people are going to get to play the games that they played and enjoyed, which doesn't really make any sense if you stop and think about it for a second, that it's just because this console war argument has been going on, as long as we've both been in the industry. Like, it's a kind of constant thing.
Yeah,
they were kind of forced into that situation, right? Yeah. I mean, this goes back to, post Xbox One launch, when they'd managed to piss off and isolate absolutely all of their fans, and they were forced onto the back foot into damage control mode and to hold the fan fests and to give the fans what they want to try and bring them back on side. But what the fans want to hear and what makes Xbox Microsoft money are not necessarily the same thing. And, this is probably a good lesson for a lot of consumers to not always believe what, big corporation is telling you.
They're not going to take that lesson. Come on now. They're making new banners showing what Xbox games are coming out in 2024 free of charge as we speak. But let's not bully them any further. Second story, Elden Ring's first expansion trailer has confirmed a June release date. The Shadow of the Erdtree will be released on PS5, PS4, Xbox One, Xbox Series, and PC on the 21st of June. It will cost $34.99. I thought that trailer was excellent. Jake,
amazing.
Are you an Elden Ring man? What did you feel about this trailer? Are you ready to be hurt again?
Yeah, so I'm terrible at Souls-like games, particularly the FromSoftware ones. Elden Ring is the one I stuck with, and I got through to the end, and I played it for hours and hours and hours and hours. And it beat the crap out of me, basically. I'm super excited about this, especially because June is wide open. I mean, Destiny 2's final expansion is coming out in June, but other than that, there's nothing really. So I think everyone is going to go Elden Ring mad again. Like, I think it's all you will see.
Yeah, especially, they have just such a way of... The trailer isn't super cinematic heavy. It's clearly just a free cam, following people doing the fights, but that's more than enough. Andy, you mentioned in the Slack that you thought this looked fucking brilliant.
Hey, it looks amazing. Yeah. Do you know what? I'm most excited that it's 35 quid.
Yeah.
Because that hopefully suggests that it's really meaty.
Yeah.
Because, they announced it. Did they announce it? Did they announce it a year ago?
I think so, yeah.
And what, Elden Ring came out 2 years ago?
Yes.
So I was hoping that this would be something substantial.
I think it will be.
This suggests it is. And yeah, I'm the same as Jake. I've always dabbled into From Software games. They've never fully captured me. I've played all of them to some extent, probably a couple of hours, right? Demon Souls got me. The remake.
Oh yeah.
Finished it all the way through.
That's
absolutely
still one of the best.
Fell in love with it. Yes, I mean, yeah, it's so the visuals go a long way, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a little reward.
That's
every time you go to another area. And then Elden Ring, I kind of carried it through. It's just an incredible piece of art.
They've said a little bit about it here. Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree takes players beyond the Lands Between to explore the Land of Shadow, a completely new world from Elden Ring. Players can seamlessly travel back and forth between its vast maps, interspersed with diverse situations, meticulous dungeons where menacing enemies roam. It's a whole new map. By going by their previous DLC, this is going to be absolutely massive. And Elden Ring was already a ridiculously massive game, so I have high hopes. Jake, what do you think they do after this? I think they go straight Elden Ring 2, considering that has been such a breakout success.
Yeah, I mean, I would usually say they would go and make something else. Usually they've kind of alternated. But I kind of feel a bit like Elden Ring 2 was so big, they should just follow up. I'm expecting to see this structurally to be quite similar. I think this will be kind of the half step, which is good for me, because I think the best thing about Elden Ring was that if a boss was beating you or you didn't like where you were, you could just turn 180 and just walk until you thought, found something else to batter.
Right? And you could just cheese it with the spirits, which won me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. My spirit was Will Nelson, who works at PCGN, who I just got to co-op with me every time I couldn't beat a boss. I was like, this dragon's really annoying me. Can you come and help me? And he would, you know, turn his PlayStation on and come and begrudgingly beat the boss for me. But yeah, I think Elden Ring 2 is probably next, but I think it'll be a long time before we see it. I mean, this is kind of, I would say, like one fairly big-sized map. They've been working on it 2 years. I think it could be another 3 years before we see another big release from them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we got another Sekiro.
Oh, yeah.
That did like, it's under the radar, but that did really well.
Does Activision retain publishing rights to that, or do they own it?
I don't know, but I do know it did very well, and Activision were very happy with it. I mean, obviously the situation changed now. They've been sold to Microsoft, potentially. But that game did very, very well. And also, it's healthy within a studio like From to have another game like that, because you can bring in younger directors and, you know, kind of train them up. So I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened. But I think the thing that you're seeing behind the scenes is that From Software kind of acquired the trademark or the rights for, I don't know if they've got the publishing rights. I think it was a trademark for Elden Ring from Bandai Namco.
Mm.
And they've had a lot of investment in recent years, I think from Tencent, from Sony. And they have been talking about moving into a position of self-publishing. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but that would be interesting because they've been partnered with Bandai Namco for years.
Yep.
You know, I worked at Bandai Namco for about 2 months, 10 years ago, and I worked on Dark Souls 2 Remastered, the PS4 one. And, super clear, they got a very, very close relationship. I mean, Bandai Namco's worked on like all of their games, right, going back decades.
I think the only one they didn't work on was Bloodborne because of the Sony connection. But
yeah, Bloodborne and obviously Sekiro, but you're going back like Armored Core and stuff like that. You know, they've been together for decades and decades. So I would be surprised if that ended, because they get the top tier treatment from Bandai Namco, right? They are Bandai Namco's number one.
Stuff,
you know.
But Bandai's still like a part of it for this DLC, but what you're likely not going to see next, and people will not be happy, is the Bloodborne mythical remake. Hidetaka Miyazaki was doing some rounds, and Eurogamer asked them about a Bloodborne remake. Quote, "It's a title we hold very dear, just as much as our fans. It does make me very happy to see that there are still so many people passionate about it. Put simply, it makes me very happy to see it's a title with a lot of specific memories, both for me and the staff who worked on it." Andy, this is the lowest selling Souls game, but it seems to be the most beloved one by the hardcores. What do you think the reason is they haven't even done a slightly gussied version for PS5 that wouldn't require a full remake's worth of work?
That's a really good question. I wish I had done some research before you asked it, because I've definitely had people talk to me in the past about what's going on with that. I mean, I don't know if Jake has as well, but there's definitely been whispers for a while that there's been something going on.
I think the only bit that's kind of like safe to talk about and isn't just people chatting over pints, right, as happened with so much of this stuff, is that it's kind of complicated because Sony and From both kind of put equal chunks into it and both feel like they should do well out of whatever comes out of it. So anytime that Sony makes a move towards PC, people are like, oh, Bloodborne could finally come to PC. But I think ultimately it's just kind of complicated. And From Software's stock, like, with kind of fans is so big now, it feels a little bit silly for them to kind of do anything they're not going to retain full ownership of. Which
yeah,
I guess is what you see in Elden Ring as well, right?
Yeah. And also,
I mean, it always comes down to stuff like that, is business stuff, right? I mean, I've not heard that, but I imagine it's absolutely correct.
Yeah. There's also, I bet if Sony was still in the Hearts and Minds era, like the PlayStation 4 era, they would take the hit on this just to have it as
if they weren't in full hubris mode, right? Yeah. They might actually do something that fans want.
There's also there are some issues with the way that game is designed, like that it runs at 30 for like specific in-game reasons. But when you have people like Lance McDonald that are like breaking the game and getting it running on a jailbroken PS5 at 60 frames a second, like, it doesn't seem like the work required is the issue.
No, I imagine that's trivial. It's it's 100% what Jake just said.
It's just the money thing.
Well, how much money are we going to get, you know?
Yeah.
It's from software that made that game as, you know, PS4. What was it? The early years of PS4.
2015.
Yeah. It's not the same from software of today.
Watching that trailer though, I'm fairly certain this is what we get, right? I think we can finally stop. We won't, but I think you can finally stop asking about the Bloodborne remake anytime Sony announces anything. I think this kind of Land of Shadow and like all the stuff you see in that trailer, this is it, you know? This is your kind of Bloodborne follow-up.
Well, I mean, just the little sprinkles we've said on this podcast will reignite 1,000 arguments, but there was always that persistent rumor about Bluepoint doing it, and it's like, no, that's not what they're doing. Like, it's Bloodborne is a wonderful, wonderful game, and I wish they would. Like, I don't care about remake. There's no real need to remake that game, but just put it out. Even put a patch out for the PS4 version that lets it run like a limitless frame rate, and that would be fine. Like, I don't care that all the faces still look melted. What a game. It's been a busy old week. We had a Nintendo Partner Direct that Nintendo just kind of plopped out. They didn't even bother streaming it. They just put it up as one big video, so everyone was racing to try and get the news out of it. I've collated a bit of a highlight reel coming to Nintendo Switch Online. RC Pro-Am, Snake Rattle and Roll, Killer Instinct, Battletoads and Battlemaniacs, and Blast Corps. Andy, the pop in the Robinson household must have been huge for these.
Do you know how many years I called Blast Corps Blast Corps?
Probably that's like a cooler sounding years.
And even more embarrassing, I was corrected when I started working with guys who worked on it, who corrected me.
This is obviously...
showed me all of their concept art for the sequel that wasn't greenlit.
Mm, you should just tweet that. That'll go well.
Maybe 20 years ago, that would be a banger headline in like 2006.
Obviously, this is more rare stuff being added to NSO, but they're missing big rare stuff. I saw it posited that the reason the Donkey Kong rare games aren't getting posted to NSO is because Nintendo is working on a Donkey Kong game and they want to control that. And it obviously
I don't know if that's true. I'd say you're trying to put we don't need a conspiracy.
I'm just asking questions.
Vast conspiracy to explain why Nintendo don't bother putting NSO games out. They're quite capable of being really crap at rolling out NSO games on their own without a reason to do so. They are definitely working on a Donkey Kong game, 100%. I've said this before. I mean, this is just me, you know, adding up the dots rather than actually knowing anything, but they don't do things by accident. You don't start pushing the IP for no reason. There's like Donkey Kong Lego. He's like prominently in the Mario movie. There's a Donkey Kong theme park opening in a matter of months. They've just remastered the most niche GBA Donkey Kong game, you know, to get it out the door. They're touring Japan right now with a giant inflatable Donkey Kong, you know, to advertise the theme park world opening. Yeah, they're definitely...
What could it mean, man?
Yeah.
Star Fox.
Also, more in that this has been the longest week in video game history. We've not done a podcast since the Switch 2 got booted into 2025. That just occurred to me there.
Have you not put it in this podcast? Are we not talking about that?
I genuinely thought
just
that
the biggest
so
story
long
of like
ago.
The last.
Yeah, let's start again. I'm going for the Switch 2.
Story number three. The Nintendo Switch will now release in 2025, sources say. According to one Andy Robinson, he's heard on the grapevine via the leakers that are at Butlins that Nintendo's plans have shifted.
I filed this story from Butlins.
And multiple developers working on Switch 2 games were informed that the console will now release in 2025. We go now to our Butlins correspondent, Andy Robinson.
Yes. So, I mean... as we all know, right? So I was looking into this story last week, and there are a bunch of other journalists I know were also looking into this story, because this is what happens, right? I mean, I always see like when one of these stories comes out and then a bunch of outlets all jump on it, I always see people like on forums and Discord and stuff like going, oh, how comes? I hate it when they all say that, you know, they all corroborate each other and blah, blah. It's
because we're all working on the story, we're all chasing the same sources. What's happened is Nintendo has briefed publishers that they're now targeting Q1 2025 for their next console. And they obviously know it's going to leak eventually, because you tell that many people, someone's going to tell someone, it's going to trickle down and blah, blah, blah. So in terms of how the story broke, there was a Brazilian journalist. I haven't got his name in front of me, so I'm not going to attempt it. But he's congratulations to him on a good scoop. He put it in a Brazilian podcast, and I was literally working on the story, annoyingly. But thankfully, I was able to corroborate it first out of the major Western outlets. Then Eurogamer and Bloomberg followed. And we knocked 8% off their share price, so happy days. But yeah, no, so it basically, I don't know why it slipped. It was planned for late 2024, you know, as of late last year, up to at least late last year. I think they made the decision to move it possibly even as far back as December, January time. And this information's just starting to trickle about into, you know, media circles. We don't know why they've done it, because it really, there's a lot of incentive for them to launch their new console this year, because it's a slow year for the other platform holders. You know, obviously Nintendo Switch is the original, is not getting any younger. One person suggested to me that it might be as simple as they don't think their first party software is ready, but I don't imagine that's something that they've told partners, so that's probably speculation.
Mm.
But they will want to launch with as much as possible, and it kind of makes more sense, because I remember we broke the late 2024 date last year, and even kind of industry, like pundits and sources I was talking to at the time, were just pointing out how weird that was, that Nintendo would launch a console late in the year now, because the Switch was so successful that first year. Their whole strategy on Switch, which launched in March 2017, coming off the back of the Wii U, which was a failure, was, right, what we're going to do is we're going to launch early in the year, and we're going to launch a first-party game every month until that first Christmas. Then by the time we get to that first Christmas, we're going to have this amazing lineup of games, and we're going to make sure all of our major franchises are there in the first year. I mean, go back and have a look at Switch's first year. It's insane. You know, they launched with Zelda, one of the best games ever. They had Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. They had a Xenoblade in there.
Arms.
Mario Rabbids.
Arms.
Of course, Arms.
Arms.
Yeah. I'm sure Pokemon was the following year. Smash was the following year. There was a Kirby game in there somewhere. There was Splatoon 2. Like, they just went all in, and it worked. So the assumption was always, well, of course, they're just going to do that again, which it now looks like they are going to. Maybe they realized that. Maybe they got, you know, strategically, they decided to do that. But, you know, there was every incentive for them to come out this year, but there's no point in doing it if they don't think they have the software to kind of, you know, pump out a game every month, you know. But at the same time, they kind of want to stay away from GTA 6 unless they've got it. Because if there is a system seller, that is a system seller for PlayStation and Xbox. So it's disappointing, right? I think it's already, it feels like 2023 part two. It's already depressing. Like, still people getting laid off. There's more layoffs coming from what I hear. You know, we've had a couple of good games, but it's just, it feels like a grim landscape. And Switch 2 was something that felt like it could pick up the industry, especially with, and something like that helps the whole industry, by the way. You know, we're talking about Xbox and PlayStation and their, you know, financial numbers and how they're a little bit grim. And you need, that helps when you have, especially a Nintendo console that is a bit more innovative, to bring in new players, you know, new players into the console space. You know, I think we quite desperately need that right now. So hopefully it's a strong launch. Hopefully it's an interesting console and not just, you know, Switch Mark 2, which I imagine it isn't.
You're confirming today that Arms 2 : Legs is not ready for the Switch 2 launch, and therefore has been punted into 2025.
Elbows.
Yeah, knees and toes DLC. Jake, give me a prediction of a date and a price for the Switch 2, and if you are correct, if you are correct to the day, I will buy you your Switch 2.
Usually I'm always good. You used to ask me for Metacritic predictions. And
yeah,
I get
you're
them
very
right.
good at Metacritic predictions.
This one's very scary. I reckon it'll be about 400 quid, and I think it will launch early in March. If you want a specific day, I'll go for the 11th of March, but there's no science behind that. I'm just putting the speculation out there.
Remember, VGC Maniacs, if it does launch on the 11th of March, please do not remind me or deepfake this video so that Jake said like the 12th of March or something like that.
Well, I think March makes sense because you don't want to launch when no one's got any money after Christmas, and you don't want to launch just before Christmas because then you can't buy any, right? Like, I know
they'll be pressured to include it in the fiscal year as well, right? I mean, their fiscal year runs until the end of March, so I think it's almost certain that it will come out in March now.
Yeah. Switch was March 15th or something like that. That date's familiar for me.
It came out during GDC, I remember, because I was showing Ukulele at GDC when I was still a game developer, and everyone was just trying to find a bloody like electronic store in San Francisco during the game developers conference that would sell them a Switch without a pre-order, which of course didn't happen. I cannot tell you how annoying it is during the launch of the first major hybrid handheld home console that you have to do two long-haul international flights without it. So you have to fly home to collect yours.
My most annoying thing about the Switch launch is that I had to review Horizon Zero Dawn when my Switch arrived. And like, once you've, like, Horizon was a pretty decent game as far as I was concerned, and I played Zelda for 2 hours and was like, I actually don't want to ever go back to Horizon ever again.
My Switch pre-order story is that this was still when Game Center and Paisley existed, God rest it. The morning of the Switch launch, it was about 5 minutes after it opened, and I saw everyone get theirs on Twitter, and then I just decided to phone them, and I was like, do you have any of them? And he was like, we've got one red and blue one. Do you want to just come and get it? I was like, yeah, fuck you. Fine, I'll be down in 5 minutes. And that was it. Like, the FOMO was so overwhelming just from seeing people get theirs.
You're bringing back memories now. I wasn't quite as excited as I should be for that launch because I'd spent about 3 months up to that point having awkward meetings with Unity and Nintendo of Japan trying to get our game to run on the bloody thing. It's like all these lovely Unreal Engine games like launching on it, which looks spectacular, like Snake Pass. Why does our game not run more than 10 frames on Unity? Make it work. Years later, I'm going off on a tangent here. Years later, I was in Japan at there's a games industry meetup out there called Otoru. That's the Otaku one. I think there's a different one for Tokyo. So it's like just a weekly social where anyone in the games who can meet up, and they rent a bar and they all meet up and stuff. It's quite a good little, mixer. I randomly met some guys from Unity Japan there. Oh, hello. Yeah, how are you? And it's like, where are you from? Or Playtonic? Oh, yeah, we were the ones working on your game. So all of those shouty meetings, get it to work. Like, those are the guys at the end of the chain getting told off to make it work on Switch.
Those poor guys. They deserved better. Speaking of people that deserve better, we will see you after this break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. The only other thing from the Nintendo Direct that I simply must highlight is that we are getting the Star Wars Battlefront games back on modern platforms.
Awesome, right? I'm amazed that they've done that. That is so cool.
Not only that, they've put new content in it. Kit fucking Fisto is in this game now. That is the that should be the headline.
That's a made up character. Sorry,
everyone
man,
who's about everyone who's about 25 is like losing it. Oh yeah.
But yes, the 64 player online multiplayer. All they've gotten all the original maps and now old modes that didn't work on certain maps have been like changed so that they can work on new maps. It seems like actual work has been done into this, and this is the biggest. This is the story that is most translated into the Facebook feeds.
I'm loving the Disney era where they're just like, yeah, go on in. Yeah.
Disney are the good guys of this like of this era. Like every single time I speak to Disney about games, that there's a guy, Bill Roseman, over there, and he seems to pop up on all of these interviews that I do around games, and everything he does is he goes, I kind of love the characters, and as long as I'm talking to people who love the games, and that's like that's been Marvel. And so I think Disney just as a whole has adopted this, let's just give people what they want.
Well, now that Bob Iger in the last week has realized what video games are, though, that might be over.
Big business. Bob Iger is going to instantly, he's going to cancel the Jedi series, he's going to fire Cameron Monaghan, he's going to bring back Disney Infinity, get those figures out of B&M. But yeah,
that was Chris Scullion's loft.
You can try. Don't touch any of Chris Scullion's toys. It will break your hand. Chris Scullion will return. His house currently has several holes in it, so that's why he's not been a part of this podcast. Apart from when that Xbox thing happened and he had to come on and defend Microsoft's honor because he is Phil's biggest fan.
There's some breaking news.
There's some breaking news
on Twitter that we can talk about for 30 seconds because that's how interesting it is. Sony is adding PC support for PSVR 2 this year. The four people who have purchased one.
Oh, well, I didn't purchase it. I have one. So it's going to be some serious stains on that PSVR 2. Story number 5. Speaking of stains. Randy Pitchford has teased a new Borderlands game. He says, look, we haven't even announced anything of it. Clearly we're working on something. This is following some tweets suggesting that we might get Borderlands 4. Jake, did you watch the trailer for 2024 Oscar Best Picture Borderlands movie?
I did, and despite not really liking Borderlands anymore and really hating the whole Tiny Tina thing the games did, I thought the trailer looked pretty funny, actually.
Oh, Jake.
I know. And I like good movies, I promise. It's just, you show me Kevin Hart screaming wildly while something happens just off screen that I'm into it, man.
He is a funny guy. Like, I will watch him laugh. I don't actually think the things he says are very funny, but I think him laughing is really funny. So
he reacts in a funny way. Yeah. That's his whole acting tool set, is he reacts to things around him in a way that I find funny.
Look, I used to love Borderlands. I thought Borderlands 1 and 2 were absolutely incredible games. 3 is fine, but it didn't hit the way it used to. But yeah, that trailer was a bit odd. Borderlands 3 seemed to do pretty well. So Jake, do you think a 4 would do well? Do you think that's what they're doing? Like, because, I mean, what else did Gearbox have?
Ultimately, if you're releasing a Borderlands movie, you know, there's a big budget Borderlands movie, you know, Cate Blanchett's in it. Like, obviously, you try and release a game to take advantage of that if you can. Yeah. Borderlands 4, I guess, would be an obvious choice, but I guess you could always go back and just, like, remake Borderlands 1 if they wanted to.
I'd be fucking well up for that.
But, you know, that would also kind of get the nostalgia hit and maybe be a bit cheaper for them in terms of design. But other than that...
I'm acutely aware as well that they're potentially up for sale and have been for some time. Mm. So it's probably in their interest to talk up the fantastic things they're working on.
Yeah.
It's that, or they go back to Brothers in Arms, right? And I love Brothers in Arms, but no one else remembers that it exists.
Do you know what? It's actually, I don't think people appreciate how massive Borderlands is.
Oh yeah, it's
stupid, like how many copies that sells. I mean, when the third came out, it was on like every billboard and bus everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it is properly a mainstream franchise.
I'm shocked Take-Two haven't just bought them yet. To get Borderlands, essentially, like that seems like such a big thing for them. But
I don't know if they have. There's something going on there. I can't recall if they've got publishing rights or what have you, but when they were sold to Embracer, Take-Two didn't seem bothered. They were like, we have an ongoing relationship with them. It's fine.
Mm.
So I don't know if they have like a long-term publishing rights agreement or something, but they probably do.
Yeah. The first Borderlands cover had the guy going like that with one hand. The second Borderlands cover had the guy shooting himself with his other fingers. The third broke this tradition. I would like the fourth cover to have guns on their feet, shooting themselves in the head 4 times. That's my only note, Gearbox. Also, could you bring back the sniper rifle from the first game that was so broken it would send enemies like out of the geometry of the map and then just instantly kill them because it had so much force? Because the way they randomly rolled those guns in the first game, they could spawn broken weapons. Fucking tremendous game.
Since I'm in the mood, I remember being in a meeting for the pre-cell shaded version of Borderlands.
Oh,
and not
yeah.
many people remember that they kind of soft rebooted the art direction because it looked like a very bland post-apocalyptic game, and then they cell shaded it afterwards. And I fell asleep in this meeting at Leipzig.
It's really just like an amazing triumph of marketing if you think about it, because they basically just said, we have a lot of guns in our game and here's a trap from Caged the Elephant. And yep. it just became one of the biggest.
But that was their thing. Their whole thing was just the guns. Oh, we have loads of guns. All right. But I'm falling asleep.
They all felt
asleep.
The same.
Like just showing them. You all, exactly. Like showing you all the guns. It's like, I'm falling asleep. And then they, now it looks like really fun, like really cartoonish and it has loads of guns. Okay. That's more interesting.
I'm a big shooter guy, and it's annoying to me when it's like, hey, there's 1,000 different guns, but 950 of them feel
yeah,
very,
all
very
shit.
Same.
Yeah. Like, it really isn't impressive. Like, coming from, I used to love Bungie's games at the time. It's like, yeah, but they have 10 guns that are all brilliant that no one can replicate, you know?
Speaking of Bungie, just before we go, I asked the VGC Nation whether or not Halo was still a relevant franchise. This is in the wake of watching a trailer for that Halo TV show pop up on YouTube and thinking...
I've started watching it, you know.
Let's kick this off. Is it all right? Because I've heard...
It's quite good. Well, I mean, I've only just got to the second season. I think the second season's 3 episodes in. And from people I've been talking to on the internet, apparently the second one is a lot better than the first one. First one, I can imagine, without having looked at any of the discourse, probably it wasn't what a lot of fans were expecting, because it's very much like Master Chief with his helmet off having an existential crisis, you know. But actually, the production value is pretty good. It's actually fairly well done. They haven't just slapped it together. I'm quite looking forward to watching the second season.
Someone who I won't name because of their employment status liked the first episode and then filled a chat with saying it was one of the worst things they'd ever watched, but that honestly made me want to watch it more. But they are an absolute Halo diehard. I posited the theory that no one who is so young that they didn't see 9/11 on TV cares about Halo. Do you see where I'm going with this? So if you are 25, if you're 24 and up, you care about Halo because you were young when Halo 3 was like the hottest shit in the world. But if you're younger than that, you've only seen bad Halo, and thus the series has fallen out of favor. Jake, what do you think about my hypothesis?
Well, but I think as the Star Wars, your love for the Star Wars prequel shows,
bro, I've got no fucking love for the Star Wars
came
prequels.
Out when they were young, man.
Actively dislike the Star
Wars.
Those
are just
prequels.
The guys who are going to be telling you in the next 5 years that you're chatting shit, and the best one's Halo 4.
Yeah,
no, that's how it goes.
Yeah, because the big issue with your hypotheses there is you're like, Halo 3 is the hottest shit in the world, but actually Halo 2 was the hottest shit in the world.
Halo ODST is the hottest shit in the world.
Not the campaign, certainly not.
No, but running around with dual needlers and everyone just dying, it was horribly, horribly broken at an age before people ever banned
Halo 3
anything.
Is better than Halo 2.
Do
you know what's better than Halo 3? ODST.
ODST.
Like firefight mode is such a joyous time for me.
So good. On my wall in my house, I've got two posters. One says ODST, the other one says Kit Fisto, and that's it. And he's ripping apart his office. Oh, that's now we're talking.
That's my cover for official Xbox magazine.
Nice.
My ODST review. Bungie's back. Get ready to drop.
Yeah.
That's there ready for every podcast, right? Like, just in case ODST could be mentioned.
Andy, can you look at the back of that magazine if there's any dodgy numbers that I can phone and get some interest
in? No, there's an advert for Risen.
Oh!
Remember that game?
I don't. I take it that magazine didn't do the smutty stuff because it was official. You were looking for more...
No, Microsoft wouldn't have allowed them to do the smut. Otherwise, they definitely would have done, I imagine. Yeah. What did I give ODST? Oh, there's a big, massive advert in the way. What's going on? Did I not? I gave it a 9.
A 9?
I think
only a 9.
A seminal side story to one of the best FPSs.
Oh, why can we not fucking lay the website out like that? Just have screenshots of 50 different sizes all over the place.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. Chris Webble says, it had everything back then and then some, but players' tastes changed after 15 years of developmental leaps in the FPS genre. Arena shooters fall by the wayside and players just have simply lost moved Bungie. On.
Yeah, that's the gist.
That's it. There's nothing else. Bungie. There's no other...
They lost Bungie.
Like, if Bungie's still making them, fine.
Yeah.
Microsoft are very bad at setting up studios. Very bad.
Look at Gears of War.
343 is the perfect example of that.
Yeah. I thought Halo Infinite was pretty fucking good. And that first weekend of Halo Infinite multiplayer was cracking, but then it didn't stick and never got its claws into me. I don't know what the...
I did
because
this,
it was one of those, wasn't it, where they spent more time talking about how they weren't working past 5 p.m. than they did in making actual post-release content for the game.
Yeah.
So it came out and there was nothing coming out and people got ready. And make no mistake, that game was good as well. Like, the campaign, I really enjoyed the campaign. The multiplayer was brilliant and everyone loved it. But after two, three months, there was nothing coming out for it. And they kind of shot themselves right in the foot.
Yeah, it was
I
a shame.
Think the big thing that always happens to me with shooters, and actually this happened to me in real time when I was playing with you on the multiplayer, is that I play the first 2 or 3 days and it's quite good and fun and nice. And then suddenly a bunch of people who've been playing it for like every hour get quite good at it. And I'm now in my 30s. And so this is one play session where you're like, I'm actually done with this game. I can't play this anymore. Because everyone is just so much better than me. But I love the campaign. I played the hell out of it. I played through it like last year. I played through it for review. It's a really, really good game and isn't talked about enough. And you get the kind of retrospectives now already where people are like, oh, Halo Infinite is good now. It was always good. It's just they're kind of slowly making it a little bit more playable for those of us that can't make it our whole life in multiplayer, ultimately.
Yeah. That's something I love about the EAFC review period, because I would confidently destroy any journalist in the world at EAFC, but they also give it to the pro players during that time. So if you match up against someone and their name is like Red Bull Johnny XXX and they have a million icons, it's like, well, I might just as well turn the game off at this point. Andy, very briefly before we go, you went to Windsor to see a woman, sadly not Her Maj, but someone more important, Princess Peach. How is Princess Peach's showtime from what you played?
My preview's on the website. My preview's on the website. it's got a lot of personality, right? Which carries it a long way. It's a very simple game. It feels a bit like a Kirby game in that sense, but less polished. Mm. That's the impression I got from the first hour. It's like tons and tons of, it's like a Taylor Swift concert. Like the amount of kind of costume changes. And it just veers in all sorts of directions. Like the variety of gameplay is mad. Like you'll be like a chef, like baking, giant cookies and decorating cakes. And the next minute you're a ninja going through stealth segments and, 2D platforming. And then you're a figure skater, doing like rhythm action stuff. So it's better than I thought it looked before I played it. It's like when you're actually in there doing all that stuff back to back to back with no filler, it's like, you know what? This has got a lot of charm. So I'm interested to see how far they carry it, because that's an hour with it. Obviously the difficulty is translating that to a full game. Kind of adding a bit more depth than what was there, which was not much, but I enjoyed it.
Good stuff. Right, once again, before we go, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth review on the site, review cast on YouTube, and later on podcast platforms around the globe. Spoilers, it's a hell of a fucking game, but there's a lot to talk about, so we took a good 70 minutes doing so. I won't be here next week. It will be one Chris Scullion, presuming his house hasn't exploded or something like that. However, next week is going to be Pokemon Presents, and I would feel remiss waiting all the way till March to talk about it. So I might just hijack the last 10 minutes of the podcast and rant breathlessly from wherever I am going. Jake, thank you for joining us. Where can we find you on the internet?
I think just Twitter or X or whatever you're supposed to call it this week. I am Jake Tucker_Jake Tucker. I should know. I just log into it every day.
Yeah, log into it every day and post the horrible, horrible opinions that you have. Andy, is Andy_VGC. I am at Jordan Midler. You can send comments, questions, and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. Thanks to the great Grant Kirkhope for use of the VGC podcast theme. Your check is in the mail, Grant. Until next time, say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next time.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.